This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two, Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown here for the next couple of hours as we sweat this Orioles over a run and a half in the first five. We're already in the top of the fourth. They've had a couple of chances here, but just a little bit unlucky, lining into double plays and guys making really great catches. That said, we have one on, no outs here in the top of the fourth with Gunnar Henderson up with a full count. So Peralta's going to have to come to him here with a guy on. So maybe he catches a fat part of the plate. We just hit a two-run dong here, and then we just move on with a winner here in the top of the fourth inning. So we'll see. Peralta comes to a set here in the stretch, and it seems as if our stream froze. So, he just took a very, very long time. Gunnar Henderson gives it a ride, but into the gap, it is caught in center field right there. So one out, top of the fourth inning. We'll see if we can't get a couple runs across here over the next couple of innings. Some other notes that we just pulled from the games yesterday, and shout out to the guys over at PFF. Like I said, they chart just kind of all of these different things. I think with the Giants in particular, we don't really know what that offense is going to look like outside of the fact that we know Malik Nabers is definitely going to start at wide receiver when healthy. But outside of that, I mean, you go in and you look at the running back position for the Giants, and like Scadaboo, Tyrone Tracy, and Devin Singletary all played with the starters, and none of them played more than the other one really with the starters as well. And so this is something to keep in mind here. Scadaboo played the first two snaps, but then on third down came out, Tyrone Tracy came in. So obviously Tracy going to be maybe looked at as their third down back with this. And so something to keep in mind there, certainly from a season long prop perspective, maybe even a game to game perspective, there might be a three headed monster there for the Giants. And so some unders to look at there for them. And then on the wide receiver side, Nabers is definitely going to play, but they have Darius Slayton, Darnell Mooney, Calvin Austin, Odell Beckham, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Braxton Berrios. And then they spent a third round pick on Malachi Fields. So all these dudes, I think, are all in the mix to actually get playing time. I know people just assume that it's definitely going to be Darius Slayton, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. I mean, you did spend a third round pick on a wide receiver. You went and signed Mooney and Austin to bring them in. I don't know how much juice Odell has left. I don't even know if he'll make the team. Juju Smith-Schuster, kind of the same thing there. Braxton Berrios, all have been good at times in their career, but we don't know exactly what's left in the tank for any of them. But basically that this is just going to be a wacky wide receiving core, wacky skill position, just group all in general. Remember, Jalen Hyatt is still like lingering out there too, that leg injury. So crazy there from the Giants' perspective, and we'll try to keep an eye on that and monitor that, because maybe there's some opportunity there as well. Outside of Nabers, I don't know if we know really much anything about these skill positions and what's going to happen. Even the tight end position, we talked about Isaiah Likely being there. He only played 6 of 11 snaps with the starters. 5 of those snaps went to other tight ends. So we shall see. NFC North exact finishing position. And this is a very interesting division because there are a couple polarizing teams here in this one for sure. Lions are your favorite to win the division. Plus 160, plus 240 on the Packers, plus 325 on the Bears, and then 5-1 on the Vikings. Now, this number has come down on the Bears. This was closer to 4-1 on the Bears. I think they're getting a little bit of love here in this. The Vikings certainly created a little bit of buzz too. The Packers, where do you fall on the Packers? Because this is where maybe some of this betting opportunity could come in. Is there a world that exists where this Packers team is last in the division? And before you roll your eyes, think about this. What if there is something left in the tank there for Kyler Murray, who is now throwing to by far the best skill position core that he's ever had? I mean, when you think about the fact that you have Jefferson, oh man, we're going to get a warning track. Yeah, we're going to get a warning track flat. Two ropes off of Peralta and nothing to show for it. Beavers thought it was gone too. He shakes his head as he like trots around first base. Well, we got one more shot at it here with this one. So you look at this with Jefferson and Addison in there, Jennings, Hockenson. And then you have the fact that he has KOC coaching him now. I mean, like, this is there is upside here for this Vikings team for sure. The Bears, I'm higher on than most. Everyone keeps pointing to regression for the Bears. Well, regression doesn't have to happen. And also, regression only happens if they were definitely playing over their skis. And, like, yeah, there were some one-score games in there and things like that. But Ben Johnson was also in his first year. He was still getting the lay of the land. It was still Caleb Williams' first go at it with him. Now they've had a whole season together, another offseason, training camp, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I believe in Ben Johnson. I actually think Caleb Williams is a good quarterback. And so I believe in the Bears as well. And obviously you have to like the Lions mainly because, I mean, the schedule, the way they worked out for them, great schedule for them, obviously still have talent. So you got to like what you got there. Plus 350 for the Packers to finish fourth, and then plus 275 even for them to finish third. So I mean, you could literally bet both of those and just walk away. And so long as they didn't win the division, which I do not think. I like the Lions, Bears, and maybe even the Vikings better than them to win the division. So I think that that's at least somewhat interesting there in the NFC North, if you want to handicap that. I find it very hard to think that this Lions team, given the schedule, you would have to bet on injury for them to, I think, finish outside of the top two. It's just, it's a cake schedule. And that's what you get when you finish last in division. You know, you get, this is what happened with the Patriots last year, right? I mean, like, this is a very Patriots-esque setup for the Lions. A team that does have talent ends up getting a soft schedule and can kind of run with it. I kind of see shades of that too here with this team. So barring massive injuries, I can't imagine that this is going to be a disaster season for the Lions. On the NFC South side of things, this is the division that I think a lot of people cannot peg, and I don't blame you if you can't peg it. The Bucs are your favorite at plus 180. The Saints at plus 260. Now, do you believe that the Saints are actually the second best team in this division? So that kind of comes into how we would bet a market like this. Panthers at plus 325, and then the Falcons at plus 375. The Bucs at plus 460 to be last in the division. Saints at 3-1. Panthers at plus 250. And then the Falcons at plus 160. Now, this all kind of depends on your handicap of the Falcons team. And honestly, I think of the Saints team as well. I think we kind of know what we have in the Panthers. It just really feels like a hovering around 500 team, doesn't it? Like, it just really feels like you look up and they're 8-9. They're 9-8. Maybe two games under. Maybe if things ran super pure, two games over. But it just feels like this team's going to be hovering around 500. I think you kind of know what you're going to get in them. So then the handicap kind of shifts to, okay, then the Saints and the Falcons. I don't think anybody thinks the Bucs are going to be horrific. But they are older. And it is different. Mike Evans is out of town. We didn't see Bucky Irving do anything last year. Now, that offensive line had a lot to do with that. But, you know, I mean, what are you going to get in that? So, Saints and Falcons. The Saints to finish last? What if Tyler Shook isn't very good? I mean, there's a world that exists that Tyler Shook's not very good. We have a very small sample size with him. What if these teams that are very smart in the offseason went and looked at some film on him and kind of figured this team out? I don't think there's anything that jumps off the page to you at all about the Saints team. Like, what I have heard buzz about the Saints winning the division, and I think that's perfectly fine because none of these teams are any good. This is the weakest division by far, top to bottom. Like, sure, there's a couple top-heavy divisions, but, like, this is not heavy anywhere. This is the most middling division that there possibly could be. So if you wanted to take a shot on any of these teams finishing last, I would absolutely not talk you out of it at all. And that even includes the Bucs at a fat number at plus 450. Because you see this team and the way that it's constructed, and there is a world where this could go wrong for this Bucs team. I mean, Baker Mayfield played just absolutely banged up last year. And you could tell, and it looked, and he was not good. Now, Tristan Wirfs is awesome at left tackle. The middle of the line is average to below average at best. And then you look, like I said, Bucky Irving completely neutralized last year. Now, that could have done with offensive line. That could have done with Baker's injuries and people not worrying about him throwing the ball downfield as much, et cetera, et cetera. But there's all of that. And then you kind of look at this receiving core, and Chris Godwin, I think now is just a dude on the other side of his peak for sure, kind of on the decline. So Egbuka now has to be kind of like the Mike Evans, right? The alpha, the number one. And then McMillan is kind of going to be your second option there. I think there's a world in which this offense is pretty average. And then on the defensive side, it's kind of just a bunch of average guys as well. Now, Vita Vea wants out of town. Now, whether he actually gets granted a trade or not, we'll find out. But Vita Vea wants out of town. Now, if that's the case, now this defense is probably below average. So I think taking a flyer at 4.5 to 1 on the Bucs to be last or at least third at over 3 to 1, or play them both at 450 and 3.5 to 1, could be something that could get into the account for me. A little bit higher on the Falcons, I think, than most, although I reserve the right to change that opinion over the next few weeks if Tua just absolutely looks like he is a deer in the headlights, which was not very good in that game number one. But listen, he was in there for a handful of snaps. We'll see when it all comes down to it. But don't like betting on any of these teams to actually win anything. I would almost bet on the opposite for all of these teams. There's a massive downside, I think, for every one of these teams in the NFC South. When we come back, the wild card is crazy. We talked a little bit about it earlier. Do you know all of the teams that can possibly get into the playoffs? And is there a chance to bet on any of these? We'll talk about it when we come back.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Seems we might be getting a little bit of a walk back on the timeline here for Jeremiah Love. We said yesterday that it looked like at least a week with some sort of little ankle injury there. They played him a ton, which was just odd. LaFleur, he came in yesterday a bit more sore than when he left. Oh, you know, not good. He was in great spirits even yesterday. We'll keep him out this week and let it heal. So a bit more than we were anticipating. He finishes up with just, honestly, all I'm focusing on is August 15th, Saturday, blah, 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 you know, going on with that. But basically saying the end of that, though. So a little bit more than we were anticipating was how he ended that one, which is definitely something for us to keep an eye on there. And the usage seemed a little odd to me for Jeremiah Love. Like, you want to get him some NFL experience, fine. Why is this guy playing a ton of snaps in the preseason? Like I said, I'm for starters playing. I'm also for starters playing and then getting out of there. Playing a ton of snaps with a running back of all people, the most likely to get injured, just seemed very, very, very strange. And now here we have now the timeline a little bit more than we were anticipating now. So keep an eye on that one. We already said we were on Love unders as it was anyway for the season. I think that is still a good bet. Not just because of this, not just because of what we're reading here and what we're seeing here, but also because they've got a packed backfield. There's a chance that this is not a committee, but certainly a split timeshare type deal. So still like that one a decent amount. And you hear stuff like this and head you right in that direction. I would be hitting the button if I hadn't already hit the button on the under. So over Major League Baseball, we have, and I know my memory is probably being, you know, recency bias, prisoner of the moment, all the different things like that, but I don't remember us being this late in the season. And there's 40-ish game, give or take a couple of games. where there are so many teams that could possibly get into the playoffs, specifically over in the AL. Because you start to look at these standings, and right now the Yankees are the only ones I think that feel super comfortable, though the Red Sox are five games in. But then you have the Rangers, Blue Jays, Orioles, Tigers, Twins, Guardians, Mariners, all fighting for that last playoff spot. And that's, again, if it's just the last playoff spot. Who knows? This Red Sox team has stumbled of late. Maybe that gigantic lead that they had built up starts to evaporate a little bit. Like I said, nearly 40 games left in the season. So what team do we trust? Do we trust any of these teams? Is there a price that we would pay to try to get these teams into our accounts here for, again, not a season-long bet. It's a bet for 40 games. You start to look at like strength of schedule a little bit in all of this too. Which teams are going up against the toughest schedules? Which teams are going up against the easiest schedules? Now, you look at these teams, and the Orioles are the only team going up against a schedule in which their opponents have over a 50% win percentage. So the Orioles' remaining opponents have a 5-11 win percentage. Everybody else is under 500 as far as their remaining schedule. So with that, you can at least take that and say, okay, if I want to eliminate a team just strictly based off nothing else than the schedule, well, then there's your team. You boot the Orioles. They at least have teams that are over 500. That said, there's not a lot of difference in it. It's 497 on the Rangers. It's 488 with the Twins. It's 494 with the Tigers. So it's teams that are just basically right at hovering at 500. So let's start evaluating, okay, what do we want to go with this? Is it the pitching, right? Well, if you start to look at these pitching staffs, they're good and bad, I think, with all of them. We're going to eliminate the Yankees and Red Sox from this conversation for the time being, just because we are sitting here with a 7.5 and a 5.5 game. Let's just assume they're in, and we're only just fighting for that last one. The Blue Jays have Dylan Cease. He's on the hill for them today. The Rangers still have DeGrom. If you think DeGrom is still a front arm in a rotation. The Orioles, like we said, one of the hottest teams hitting-wise over the last 3 weeks in all of Major League Baseball, a top five offense and even smaller sample size, a top three offense. But the pitching side of it, that's where it gets a little tough from the Orioles side, and the bullpen gets even rougher. Tigers sold their top two arms. That said, Melton had been good. He got knocked all over the yard yesterday. Job looked good once and looked bad another time. He got knocked all over the yard. So do the Tigers really have the staying power? And then the Twins, I don't even know what to make of the Twins. I couldn't believe when I saw that the Twins were still in this thing. I promise you, it is crazy to me. I couldn't even believe that the Twins were still in this, given what we know about this squad. And, of course, we still have the Guardians and the Mariners. Now, we were talking to Grant Paulson earlier. He kind of like sides with the Mariners mainly because the question mark of the pitching at least isn't there like it is with all these other teams. You have 3 to 4 very good arms. You have one that is waiting in the minors just to get the phone call to come up. And whether he is actually in the rotation or he becomes a guy that you use in a bulk role or whatever, something like that. I mean, he is a dude that has been mowing down professional hitters left and right down in the minors. So I just wonder if he isn't right, and if it isn't the Mariners, even if we do hate what we see with the bats with these teams. I mean, let's look here. Friends over at Handy Graphs are able to help us out with stuff like this. If we look from a hitting standpoint over the last 3 weeks, we know over the course of the season, but if we just look over the last 3 weeks, we are finding Texas towards the bottom of Major League Baseball in weighted on base, the Guardians, bottom of Major League Baseball, weighted on base, and then right down there at 302, you have the Mariners. So like all of these other teams are ahead of the Mariners, but it's like you're buying in on the arms if you want to go in that direction with them, or you're buying in on a turnaround with a team that's not devoid of talent when it comes to hitting the baseball. It's just they haven't. Of course, led by Kyle Raleigh, who we kind of knew there was going to be regression. We just had no idea that it was regression that was going to literally just fall off of a cliff. And there is the epitome of this bet that we just made against Freddie Peralta. Two on, one out, an absolute laser to shortstop. So they double the guy off of second base because he didn't even have time to get back because the ball was hit so hard to short. So there we go. Dunzo threatening in three of the five innings and can't get anything across for this Orioles team, even though they were lacing the ball. That is part of baseball. Round ball, round bat, we talk about all the time with this. I can't get there on the Mariners because they can't hit the baseball. So that's not my bet. And I can't believe that I'm saying this because this is the team that I just said has burned me so much. It's probably the third year in a row that I keep talking about how this Orioles team should be able to get it done. But I think I'm going to take the Orioles. And the reason I'm going to take the Orioles is because of the bats. And I understand that you don't like the arms, but the arms do have upside. Kyle Bradish, Trevor Rogers, who, by the way, is going today. He's only given up a run in five innings here. Brandon Young, Shane Boz, that's your four. Fifth is just going to be a turnstile there for them in the rotation. But Jackson Holliday, Pete Alonso, Gunnar Henderson, Tyler O'Neill, Dylan Beavers, Kobe Mayo, Colton Cowser, Leody Tavares. Like, these are all real professional hitters. These are all dudes, right? These are all guys. And so we can get league average pitching here for this Baltimore team. And I understand the 5-11 win percentage is a little bit higher than all of these other ones. I'm not so worried about that with this team. So I think the bet for me is to get this Orioles team into the playoffs. And I can't believe I'm saying this because I wrote that off. I wrote that ticket as dead way, way, way long time ago. Guys, our second annual Pro Football Futures Draft is coming up. It's going to be hosted by your friend and mine, Dustin Sweetelson. He's going to come in, be the master of ceremonies, if you will, the MC, as we rattle through win totals, division winners, player props, stat leaders, things like that. Not only are you going to get the host, but you get Keyshawn Johnson's going to be in there. Nick Bakay is going to join us for this draft as well. So it's Thursday the 20th. 5 Eastern here on VSiN. So again, Thursday the 20th, 5 Eastern on VSiN. Come in, maybe jot down some of these. Maybe you want to get them into your account. Listen to the reasoning behind some of them as well. But Dustin Sweetelson, at the very least, will make it entertaining for you, I promise. When we come back, our very own Greg Peterson, we'll see what he's got in his account today in Major League Baseball.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We'll bring in Greg Peterson, our very own Greg Peterson, to sweat this at bat here with me. As Pete Alonso just missed that 95-mile-an-hour sinker that you and I were talking about off by like 6 inches. I mean, like, he didn't even come close to it. His bat could have been another 6 inches longer, and he still would have missed it. Like, this guy, I don't understand how these dudes that are left-handed, throw 95 and get that much run on the ball, like how anyone ever hits the ball ever, Greg. But he did. We got one across with Jackson Holliday, and we're hoping that Alonso can do us good here.
Absolutely. I am in on the money line of the Orioles.
We backed into it. There we go. We backed into a winner. Oh, man. So if you were on break, guys, sorry. I thought I'd lost the bet. They do the review. The guy actually made it back to second on the line out. We get a single by Jackson Holliday to get a run across, and then Pete Alonso steps up and comes through for us. We get the two runs in the first five. We back into it, Greg.
That's what I like because I am in on the Orioles money line, and I'm in on the over, so that's good news for me, too. We love it and always love joining you. Thank you.
Hey, man, this is just – listen, I love backing into one where it's like we have to go to replay review and see that the guy, like – fingertip hit the bag before the ball got there, and then we back into a win. So, listen, if you're going to complain about the bad beats, you also have to relish in, like, when you get super, super lucky. That's lucky. That is a lucky win, but a win is a win is a win. So, there we go. We just got robbed. You got robbed of another run right there. Is diving catch in center for the Rays to keep it to 3-1. But it's okay. We win a bet. Greg, let's head out here and start looking at your card and some interesting games today, because, as you know, listen, about 40 games, give or take, you know, left is in the season. So this is definitely the home stretch, and all of these games could certainly matter. And the Red Sox, despite that run they were on, sputtered a little bit of late, and the 5.5 game lead in the wild card is certainly not where they cannot be caught. And so you like them here today against what ends up being a scratched Paul Skeen. So it's going to be Lake Bashar that is going to be going for the Pirates.
Yep. And you got the right guy to talk about, Mr. Lake Bacher, because he is a Pirate of UW Whitewater.
Oh!
I used to go to UW Oshkosh. I called a few of his games.
No! Really?
Yes.
Also,
yeah, he's 2 years younger than me.
Also, maybe the closest guy to ever pitch for the Pirates that actually looks like a Pirate. Like he kind of looks like he looks, yes, like a Pirate, that guy.
Your best player thinks he's a pirate. To quote the great movie, yes, Dodgeball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And what you can expect here is a wholesale approach, because Lake has thrown 3 innings or fewer in every single game this year. And for the Pirates, 4.34 ERA since June 1st, 20th in the league. And the Red Sox, they're number one in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Hey, like what I've seen out of Patrick Sandoval. 3.30 ERA, about a 3.85 fielding independent, gives up a little bit of hard contact. And while the Pirates are right now number one in the big leagues in terms of run creation at home, right around about 5.4 runs per game, it's taken quite a bit of a fall since the All-Star break. And the Red Sox, post-All-Star break, they've been averaging well over 5 runs per game. Think that they get into this Pirates bullpen, and Yoan Ramirez, who's been one of the best, shall we say, long guys for the Pirates, he's been on like the paternity list, I believe it is. It's one of those lists where you're not able to play. Congratulations him. But that said, I do think that with the Red Sox, they get into that bullpen and they're able to right the ship, because, man, it's been a little bit rough for them. Took the Red Sox on the money line and that 8.5 total through the over.
Dylan Cease is on the hill today, and kind of what you see is what you get in Dylan Cease. We're talking a season-long 2.32 ERA backed up by a 2.49 expected. And if you're wondering about anything recency bias here, how about last 5 starts, 1.91 backed up by a 2.31. I mean, Cease has been amazing.
And what has not been amazing has been the Yankees lineup recently. In their last 43 games, 3.35 runs per game. Just absolutely not cutting it. Even with trading for Luis Garcia, Eloy Ramos, they have really not been able to get anything going. And, I mean, for the Blue Jays, it's not like they're lighting the world on fire on offense either. They've got one guy right now this year with over 12 home runs in Kazuma Okamoto. It's been rough for them all across. Liger Jr. wasn't even in the lineup yesterday. So I do like the total to the under, as long as you can get a 7+, because this was 7.5 overnight. I know this has dropped to 7 in a lot of places. I'm even starting to see 6.5. At 6.5, I would be skipping it, but that's at 7+. I do like the under. But for the Blue Jays, I do think that they get the job done here, even though Ryan Weathers has actually been quite good for the Yankees here recently as well. He has given up 0-1 runs in 3 out of his last 4 starts. He has been able to reduce on the deep ball when he's been away from home, giving up about 1 home run per 9 innings away from home. So I landed on the under and the Blue Jays on the money line.
So talk about Ramos. He's 2 for 31 since he joined this team. Like he has been, he's hit like 0-63 with like a 189 OBP. Like this was a guy who kind of, when the trade happened, Greg, everyone's like, okay, well, at least he's moving to a better ballpark. You know, he's not left-handed and he's not going to, you know, with the short porch there at Yankee Stadium, but anything's better than hitting in San Francisco. Well, apparently not for Ramos, who again is 2 for 30 since he joined this team. He's been horrific.
Oh man, that's absolutely hilarious. You just sometimes get that with these guys, because it feels like when you go to New York, there's a lot of guys that fall off a cliff. It's hard to be able to perform there. I'm sure that there's a lot of pressure, but not been great, to say the least, for our good friend Eloy Ramos.
Padres on the road here against the Guardians. The newly acquired Casey Mize on the hill there for them. Tanner Bibee going for the Guardians. What you like?
Yeah, I just have not been a Bibee guy. 3.99 ERA with a career low 7.1 strikeouts per nine innings. Fielding depends more around a 4.50 because he's giving up a lot of hard contact, and it fell with the result yesterday. But going into the weekend, the Padres averaging 5.9 runs per game since the All-Star break, and you typically don't get a lot of familiarity in an interleague matchup with pitcher versus hitter, but you've got that with Casey Mize. Career sub-3 ERA during the regular season against the Guardians because he had all the starts with the Detroit Tigers. For the Padres, you're putting yourself on the side of the better bullpen as well. So I do think that this is a great spot for the Padres. They had won 6 straight games going into yesterday. They do fall off a little bit, and it is a little bit of a body clock game. This is a 10:40 a.m. Pacific time start, but I think that they get the job done in a lower scoring game. Took the, at the time, 8.5 to the under. Seeing a lot of 8s out there, still like it to the under at 8. And I do like the Padres here on the money line.
Yeah, starting to hit the ball a little bit, Greg. Like, this team that was so terrible to start the year is starting to hit the ball a little bit. They could be dangerous. They could be dangerous down the stretch.
And Jackson Merrill has been a big reason why. Like, we all talk about Fernando Tatis Jr., the fact that he's got more home runs post All-Star break, but Jackson Merrill, low-key, has been one of the best hitters in all of baseball post All-Star break. And don't sleep on Ty France. They call him Ty France, more like Win France, but he is a home run for you.
Let's go Cardinals and Cubs here. What you looking at?
I'm looking at the under. Mm-hmm. We saw Mr. Baez hit 3 home runs for the St. Louis Cardinals yesterday. I don't think that he's going to hit 3 home runs again today. That would be a little bit far-fetched, and the conditions are much better for the pitchers today. Yesterday, the wind was blowing out, and plus, this is a hour later than typical. Like, this is going to be a 2:15 start time. Typically, you get a 1:15, and as the day goes along in Wrigley Field, looking at the forecast, wind is going to be blowing in more and more and more, so that helps you out the longer this game goes. And Hunter Dobbins, he's a presentable pitcher. 3.40 ERA, gives up a little bit over a home run per nine innings, but does a solid job not beating himself. Flip side for the Chicago Cubs, it's going to be Edward Cabrera's first start since June 23rd, but I like what I saw at the minor league level. Reason why he struggled so much to a 5.10 ERA earlier in the season is that he's a power pitcher that was only getting about 8.1 strikeouts per nine innings. In those 3 minor league rehab starts, the velocity was back. He was getting 15-plus strikeouts per nine innings. Typically, I love fading guys coming off the injury list, but I did land on the Cubs when they were more around minus 150. I'm seeing this going to like minus 170, minus 180. I wouldn't be willing to touch the money line at that chalky of a price, but with a total of 9, I think that you've got great value here. I landed on the under.
If you want Greg's thoughts on the Rockies and the Giants and the Royals and the Angels, head to VSiN.com. These are games you bet, not games you watch. Let's talk about Sunday night baseball here, Greg. This is at least one people want to watch as the Mariners, again, only 3 games out of that final wild card spot and chasing down the Astros there in the division.
Which is incredible because the Mariners have been so bad on the road. Entered into yesterday 24-37 on the road, and the epitome of home and road splits, Brian Wu. When he's at home, he is Brian Woohoo. 196 ERA, 0.6 home runs per nine innings, exactly what you want. And then he turns to Brian Boo away from home. 6.22 ERA away from home, and goes up against a guy in Hunter Brown on the flip side for the Astros, who's been giving out a lot of walks. His walks per nine rate is 4.9. That's a big reason why I landed on the over. But that said, for the Mariners, they have been 30th out of 30 teams in terms of run creation. Getting back Brandon Donovan should help them out a little bit, but this Mariners team has been in such bad form away from home, and right now got the MVP, in my opinion, Yordan Alvarez on the flip side for the Astros. Took the Astros here on the money line.
I am with you as well. I also am on the Astros money line. So we ride together, Greg. I wanted to fight with you today on something, and instead we're all aligned. It's okay. We can agree every now and then on all of these. Appreciate the time, buddy. Find Greg's work every single day over on VSiN.com, and go get that run in, my friend.
Oh, that will be done, and let's get ourselves some winners, my friend. Thank you.
Absolutely. When we come back, it's never too early to start talking about Survivor. Of course, we got this contest going on right out here behind us, people signing up left and right. But what does week one look like? We'll let you know when we come back.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Some good news here for Commanders fans. Mariota, it is just an MCL sprain. It looked worse than that yesterday, so not season ending, as you know, ended up having to start lots of games last year for this team with Jaden Daniels going down. And so definitely going to sideline him for the rest of the preseason, maybe a week or two into the season, but again, not a season ending anything for the knee there for Marcus Mariota. So good news on that front. And we'll, again, hope for health here for this Commanders team, because I would like to see what they look like a full season with Jaden Daniels, obviously the new weapon in Stephon Diggs and things like that. But the body, you do wonder about the amount of punishment that he will be able to take throughout the course of the season. Offensive line still somewhat of a question there. We are getting everybody out on the course now at the FedEx St. Jude. So we will be heading towards a champion, like we said. Going to need some help for some of these people out there. Jordan Spieth did birdie, so he has now moved up to a T9, which instantly rockets him up to about a 65% chance now to get inside of the top 50. That's really what we're looking at here outside of, is it going to be Scheffler, Sungjae, or Sam Burns, is which one of these guys are going to be able to move on to next week. The guys from the outside looking in, Pearson Cootie is way out on hole 10. He's T21. He started at 56th when this tournament started. He's going to have to really have himself a back nine, or it is going to be bad news for him. He is not going to be moving on to play next week. Patrick Rogers all but killed himself. He's not going to move on. Keith Mitchell started at 49th. He's even par. T24 basically puts him right at a coin flip. Birdie or two, buddy, and you're going to make it. So we'll see what Keith Mitchell does. We'll keep you updated here as Scottie Scheffler and Sam Burns have teed off now. Sungjae M parred hole number one, so he stays at 11 under. Another homer there for my Orioles, now that I just claimed the Orioles are going to get that final playoff spot. Homer there for the Orioles. They are now up 5-1 as they backdoor into our first five over a run and a half for us there. So 5-1 now, Orioles over the Rays. Rest of these games just getting started. We'll keep you updated there on those. So Survivor, up to nearly 10,000 entries now. We're sitting 20 for the big Grandissimo contest. That's a $100,000 buy-in. Of course, the $1,000 buy-in contest is just the $20 million guaranteed Survivor contest here at Circa. And of course, if you're a VSiN Pro, we break this stuff down each and every week. We follow along with all of this stuff. So go in right now. Not only do you get the betting guides that we have out for pro, college, we'll be updating the pro one here at the end of training camp, but we follow Survivor and we go in and talk different strategies there each and every week. And so that can help you along the way as well. VSiN.com/subscribe, as little as $9.99. Not only do you get all of that, but the articles breaking down every single thing going on in the sports world every single day. We're talking tennis, we're talking golf, we're talking all these sports that you don't have time to handicap. So go in VSiN.com/subscribe. But how early is too early to look at all this? And I think if you're taking this seriously, you're at least kind of going in and starting to plot at least a little bit here as to how you might want to go about it. Up to 10 entries in Survivor, two in Grandissimo. If you got a couple hundred grand laying around, you can get two entries in that one. But if you look at week number one as to where the lines currently sit and what the most likely path for some of these teams might be. Now, these are very early projections out there by some of these projection systems, but you kind of look and the Chargers are going up against the Cardinals. They are going to be massive favorites, money line favorites. We usually talk money line a little bit more than we talk spread whenever we're talking about Survivor, because it's just, you know, when you see a minus 600, you know that the team is just a massive, massive favorite. But you do have the Chargers. They're 10.5. They're going to be about minus 590, 595, minus 600 or something like that whenever this thing actually goes off. Going to be part of every money line parlay there is on the face of the planet in week number one. And I bet you that they are the most used team in week number one. A couple of different reasons for that. One, a lot of people like to play it pretty safe and just make sure and move on and not have to deal with the heartbreak and the sadness that comes of getting booted from Survivor in week number one. People just want to get through there. I think that there is a there's a world that exists too where this Chargers team, I'm not as high on this Chargers team as most people are. I think that there is a world that exists where this Chargers team, maybe you only have a couple other chances to use them throughout the course of the season as it is. They could be much better than I think, and then this become one of the teams that you want to use a ton. But I also do believe that there is a pretty decent, like, middling possibility for this Chargers team. So I do believe they are going to be not only the number one team, I think they'll probably be the number one team by a decent amount. Let's call it 8 to 10% higher than the second place team that gets picked, which I do believe is probably going to be Jacksonville. Jacksonville, a big favorite over Cleveland in week number one. I think that that is probably going to be your number two pick. That said, Jacksonville is, depending on how you view them, a team that could have a decent amount of future value. Now, that is, again, how, depending on how you view them, is the big question mark there, because I am higher on Jacksonville than most people are. I think that Jacksonville is going to win that division. I think that Jacksonville, if you kind of play the tails here, has the upside of actually maybe battling for the AFC when it's all said and done. If you don't believe that, then this is a spot to kind of get rid of them early on here. You're certainly not using them again. That's the other thing about Jacksonville, at least until week number eight in the contest. And ask how many people how difficult it is to at least make it to week number eight in the contest, because then it goes at Denver, New England, at Cincinnati, Philly, Houston. You're not confidently making that click on any of those. So it's kind of one of those where you look at Jacksonville and you go, man, even if I like them, I can't use them again until week eight against Indy. And what if Daniel Jones did recover and looks more like the Daniel Jones we saw at the beginning of last season? I don't think that's going to be the case, but it could be. We played a clip yesterday. JVT is not happy with his Colts. Certainly not on his Colts, but we don't know what the NFL is going to look like in week number eight. Not using them in nine at Baltimore. You really don't like to use road teams, right? So at Tennessee, nah, man. At New York, I guess at the Giants, but I mean, again, not really. So then it gets to week 12 against Tennessee before you'd use them again. So therein lies kind of the rub and why I do believe they'll be the second most team pick and probably why they should be the first. Because there's just not a lot of opportunity to use them with confident clicks. They do close out the season, Washington, and then at Indy. But who knows? If they're playing at the top of the game, like I think that they could be, that week 18 game, they might not need to do anything. You might be getting backups if they've already won that division. So not a lot of hope to use this Jags team, which is why probably going to get a decent amount of my entries in week number one. The other few teams that I think will garner a little bit of interest, Detroit is playing New Orleans. The Raiders are playing the Dolphins. And I think that this is a team, if you look at the Raiders, when are you going to feel like you could use them again? So I think some of the more bold people in the contest might go ahead and try to burn the Raiders and get them out of the way against the Dolphins. They're going to be more than a field goal favorite, most likely, in that game against the Dolphins at home. And when are you going to feel confident clicking the Raiders again? So I think they're going to get some love. And then to a lesser extent, you're going to get some decent amount of Philly against Washington, Kansas, you know, like you get Baltimore against Indianapolis. Like, I think that's wasting Baltimore, obviously, but there will be some people who make those clicks. But by and large, I think we're looking at the Chargers, your number one pick. They're going to be the biggest favorite of the week. And I think people aren't going to look at what you get with Jacksonville, which is a more than touchdown favorite with the team that you're probably not going to want to click again very soon. Making it to week eight is not easy in this contest. And so making it to week, trying to get there is one of those things where, okay, if you plan for what you're going to use, unless you're talking about the holiday weeks, where you have to plan ahead. But if you're planning on saving a team for week eight or week 10 or week 12 or something like that, that's fine to have that path kind of in your portfolio. But remember, it's very, very tough to make it to week eight. Talked to a lot of people who've been in this contest. See how many people have made it to week 8. There'll be a lot that tell you they've never come close to making it to week 8. So let's go to that. Chargers, Jacksonville, Detroit, probably going to be your favorites there. I like the Raiders. They're going to get a couple of my clicks. I think the Raiders have to be used early on to make sure that you're not holding on to them. When we come back, let's talk to Sean Green from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network.